Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. 9 months into the coronavirus pandemic, and it is still the number one topic of conversation because it has had such a profound impact on everybody's lives. Plus now, the fall surge in cases that was expected may have surpassed last spring when the virus first started making its way across the country. Pennsylvania set another one-day record yesterday, recording more than 11,000 positive cases. Hospital intensive care units are filling up, and staffing at hospitals is becoming a real concern, too. Everyone is waiting for a vaccine, which could just be weeks away. Since the pandemic began, we've asked and answered questions with medical professionals on this program, and that's what we're doing again on today's show. Joining us is Dr. John Goldman, infectious disease specialist at UPMC Pinnacle. Dr. Goldman, good to have you back on the program.
Thank you for having me back.
And full disclosure, UPMC Pinnacle is a financial supporter of Smart Talk. This is your opportunity to ask questions about coronavirus. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Goldman, I want to read you a quote from Robert Redfield, the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He said on Wednesday, the country faces what could turn out to be the most challenging few months in the public health history of the nation. Would you agree with that?
I would say that it won't be what could be. I would say what will be the most challenging public health months in our history.
We had
the spring peak, which had about 30,000 cases. We had our summer peak, which is at 70. And right now we're at 173,000 on average, 173,000 cases a day. I believe we had 2,800 Americans die yesterday. And we have not seen the full effect of Thanksgiving. We're about a week out. My impression is that people did not social distance. I believe that holiday travel was only down 5% from the previous year. And we are likely to see further increases. And we haven't even hit Christmas yet. So I think this is going to be an incredibly challenging time. And I think no matter what you might see on social media or from your friend on Facebook from high school, we all have to do the proper things for social distancing, which means masks, which means not gathering in large groups, and what particularly means not endangering your family members, particularly older parents or grandparents.
What are
our
some
hospital,
of the
you know, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, we've talked about this before, but this surge, although it's bigger than what many expected, was expected. There was a surge expected. What are the factors that have led to this surge right now?
There's several factors. The first, and I think the most important, is people simply weren't compliant with masking. I think that if we had been compliant with masking, we would have had a much smaller surge. We've had repeated evidence that masks work. We have UPMC Pinnacle has 7 hospitals, 11,000 employees, 3 shifts of workers, and right now a large number of patients with COVID within our walls. We never see transmission from either patient to provider, patient to patient, or provider to provider. That's despite the fact that we have people being infected outside of the hospital coming to work. And we have people who everyone masks. When everyone masks, we just simply don't see transmission. I actually feel safer in our ICU, which is currently has a lot of COVID patients in it, than I do at the grocery store or at Home Depot. I come to work to an area that has a lot of COVID patients, and I don't worry. I worry when I go to Lowe's. I worry when I go to Giant. And people need to, first of all, mask. Second of all, one of the reasons we're going to see an increase after Thanksgiving was there were a lot of people gathering in groups. And when you're with your family, you feel safe. When you're with your family, you don't think you're going to be infected by them. But a huge percentage of COVID transmission is done within the household, usually with a someone who's working, usually who's someone who's going outside, and then they infect their family members. And, you know, when we have someone who is exposed within their house, you can't social, it's very hard to social distance within your house. So we assume that they're going to get infected. And, you know, for younger people, they're going to do better. What you really worry about is the older parents, the older grandparents are that exposed. The analogy I always use is my great grandfather died in the flu epidemic of 1918. He went on a business trip and didn't come back. He probably got the flu from a family member who infected him. He got the flu that killed him from a family member that infected him. And she never forgave herself. My grandmother, his daughter, never forgave her either. People don't understand the effect you will have if you feel like you infected one of your a loved one, your mother, your father, your grandparents, and something bad happens. God forbid they die. That is not something you're going to get over. And I think people really have to realize both the seriousness of this pandemic, no matter what you see on social media, it's real. No matter what you see on social media, it is something that's very serious. And they also have to realize that they have a part in preventing it. As simple as wearing a mask and as simple as not having large groups of people get together will really slow this down. And most importantly, will protect you and will protect your family members. If something happens to one of your family members, you're not likely, and as a result of you're doing something you shouldn't be doing, you are unlikely to get over it.
We're going to be taking phone calls throughout the program and jumping around on topics. Let's start with a call from Faith in Lancaster. Faith, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm concerned about the system to make sure that people get a double dose. And here are my questions. One is, can we mix and match the vaccines if there isn't enough of one vaccine for the second dose? Can we mix and match them? And the reason I say this is because I had experience with the Shingrix shot that seniors were supposed to get two of, and there was a scarcity of the second shot. So I'm wondering, can you mix and match, so to speak, or what is the definite mechanism to make sure that a person who got the first dose will get the second? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, Faith, thank you very much for your call. And we should preface this a little bit by saying that these vaccines have not been approved yet, although it seems pretty likely that they will be and they are on their way. But I guess, Dr. Goldman, the question she asked could be asked almost of any vaccine, but these in particular, can you mix and match? And maybe you can talk about why it's important that a person, once the vaccine is available and proven to be safe, that you need two shots.
So all of these, most of these vaccines, not all of them, require two shots, either 3 or 4 weeks apart. The issue is that many of these vaccines work by different mechanisms. The Pfizer vaccine, I believe, is a DNA vaccine. The Moderna vaccine is an RNA vaccine. So you can't mix and match. If you get the Pfizer vaccine, you need to get the Pfizer booster. If you get the Moderna vaccine, you need to get the Moderna booster. This is going to be a fairly big logistical issue. We have to get essentially 300 million Americans vaccinated. We essentially have to get 600 million doses of the vaccine. And we will be making sure that once you get the vaccine, you get the proper second vaccine. We'll be tracking who got which vaccine. We'll be making plans to make sure that they're able to get the second dose of the same vaccine. But this is important because we have there's one of two ways this pandemic will end. The first will be we achieve herd immunity. That essentially means that it has to go through the population and somewhere near between 250 million and 300 million Americans will have to be infected. Currently, the best estimate of this vaccine, this virus's mortality is about 0.5%, in that range. Only one out of every 200 people die. When you first look at that, and I've seen posts on Facebook, 99.5% of the people survive this virus. It's not a big deal. If the true mortality is 0.5%, five times the flu, and it goes through 300 million people, we will have at least 1 million Americans die, probably about 1.5 million die. Compared to a typical flu season where 20 to 30,000 die, the worst is about 50,000. We will have 1 million dead Americans. With the vaccine, we're able to achieve immunity and slow down the spread much more quickly. We don't have to have the natural infection go through the population, and we will not have 1 million people die. There's been a lot of questions about the safety of the vaccine. I can tell you, for example, that the FDA is reviewing this. UPMC will do its own safety review. And from what I can tell, this is a very safe vaccine. It does have side effects. There are a lot of people who get kind of a flu-like illness the next day, including a lot of people that have to take off work. But serious side effects are rare. In addition, often we're taking vaccines for diseases that have been eradicated, that we don't see much anymore, or even something like the flu, which simply kills fewer people. With this vaccine, we're going to be giving it to stop an active pandemic. We're going to be giving it to stop hospitalizations. We're going to be giving it to stop deaths. And we'll be giving it at a time where your risk of getting the virus, your risk of getting COVID-19 is very high. So we won't be giving this for a theoretic or even kind of distant risk of possibly an old illness coming back. We'll be giving it for an active disease. From what I can tell, the vaccines are very safe. We should have the vaccine shortly after it's approved by the FDA. The FDA is going to meet, I believe, on the 10th of January. I will take this vaccine as soon as I can get it. because one, I'm convinced of the safety, and two, the disease is an active threat. The risks of the disease are hundreds of times the risk of the vaccine.
We're going to answer some more questions about that vaccine and the coronavirus itself coming up in just a few minutes. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today is Dr. John Goldman, an infectious disease specialist at UPMC Pinnacle. He's answering your coronavirus questions, and there are a lot of them as we go through the fall surge, which has surpassed what we experienced in the spring. It's a dangerous time right now. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a phone call from Aaron in Lancaster. Aaron, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. How are you guys?
Doing well.
Great. If indeed someone gets a positive test result and the prescription is self-quarantine, when does one move from quarantine to hospital or to ICU? If, you know, what symptoms have to occur?
Hey, Aaron, thank you very much for your call. Dr. Goldman, this is a question a lot of people have. When do you go to seek further help? Hospital, go to an ICU? What do you do?
So typically, you have, when people get COVID, roughly 80% will have mild disease or minimal to no symptoms. Those people clearly do not need to go to a hospital. The symptoms that you need to seek medical care are when you become short of breath, and it would be short of breath while you're walking, with less exertion than you typically would. So, for example, if you're short of breath going up the stairs. If you get really short of breath, so for example, you're short of breath while sitting, you definitely need to go to seek medical care. There are a lot of ways that you can get sick with COVID. Most people get a bad pneumonia, and people who will generally need oxygen. We give people steroids, which decrease the mortality in the disease 20-30%, and we give them a drug called remdesivir. And also, there are young people who have strokes. There are people who get blood clots. So obviously, if you have numbness, if you have weakness, if you have tingling, even relatively young people can get strokes with COVID. If you have a swelling in your leg, if one leg is more swollen than the other, that could be a blood clot. And there are slightly higher risks, we believe, of heart attack, so chest pain. So it's kind of common sense. Most people, the time frame when they become infected, it's usually about a week where they get sick enough to end up in the hospital. In the ICU would be where you usually takes about 2 weeks, and that would be where you'd have enough that we either have to give you high flow oxygen or you need a breathing machine. Clearly, once someone gets on a breathing machine, they do worse. And so we tend to give them very high flow oxygen for as long as we can. And there's a component of this being common sense. If you feel sick, but you feel like you quote unquote just have the flu, call your doctor. If you're very short of breath or you're starting to get concerned that you might be really sick, I would usually call your doctor, but you may need to go to the emergency room. We typically try to get patients through the emergency room in a way that they might not infect other people, especially if we know that you're COVID positive. We'll do things like have you met in the parking lot with a mask. And basically, if you are convinced that you're very sick, especially if you're short of breath, if you're having chest pain, if you're having numbness, if you're having weakness, if you're having tingling, That's when you need to go to the emergency room.
Let's take a call. This is Linda. Linda called in and actually recorded a question before we went on the air, and that is something you can do with any program that we have. But let's take Linda's call right now.
Hi, my name's Linda. I've heard about the increase again in the COVID virus and how many lives are being affected again, but I never hear any mention or any statistics as to if people who had it the first round have it this round. Say they do, is it less serious, equally serious, or more serious? And I know they don't want to even look into that because I've been told that by a doctor, because that would mean that the new virus vaccines would be useless. Their antibodies would not fight it if it doesn't protect you from getting it a second time.
Hey, Linda, thank you very much for your call. Dr. Goldman, what about that? Can it come back?
We believe that once you have the virus, that it is likely that you are immune for at least the first 90 days. This virus first appeared on this earth last December, and we don't know as much as we do about other viruses, for the example, the flu. I personally believe that it is likely that you will have a slow fading of your immunity because other coronaviruses have slow fading of their immunity, and that it is likely that we will need yearly COVID shots when this is all over. I like to tell people I left my crystal ball at home today. So we're projecting out a couple of years and this virus hasn't been on this earth for an entire year. We do know that there have been a couple of cases where the patient appears to be reinfected. It's hard. There are only a couple, but part of the issue is, in order to truly establish reinfection, you have to be able to sequence the virus and show it's a different strain. Most labs can't do that. When even if the virus is, your immunity fades, it is likely that this will be turned into something that much more closely resembles the flu. So the best analogy I can use is the flu of 1968, which is the H3N2 strain. In 1968, during that season, it was a severe flu. 100,000 Americans died. On the other hand, that virus still circulates today. And during a typical flu season with H3N2, with the same virus from 1968, it has a standard hospitalizations, mortality as a regular flu. And that's because we now all have pre-existing immunity because it's already gone through the population. So I expect that you are immune for at least the first 90 days. My guess is, and this is more of a guess, that the immunity will slowly fade. But I also think that instead of having a pandemic like we're having now, if we have recurrences of COVID each winter, it will be much more likely to be like the flu, because we will have so many people that have already been exposed and have pre-existing immunity.
Dr. Goldman, this was an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer yesterday that I wanted to ask about. Two studies, including nearly 10,000 patients, have shown that patients who have both COVID-19 and obesity have a higher risk of death at days 21 and 45 compared to patients with a normal body mass index, or BMI, and a study published in September 2020 reported higher rates of obesity in COVID-19 patients who are critically ill and require intubation. Have you seen that in the patients you have seen, that obesity could be a factor in getting sicker and maybe even dying?
Obesity is clearly a factor in getting sicker and the risk of death. What we initially observed at the start of the pandemic was that patients who were heavier had more severe disease. That has been borne out by these subsequent epidemiologic studies. And in fact, when you know we have monoclonal antibodies that are coming out that are supposed to be used in patients in mild disease prior to hospitalization, and one of the criteria for that is having a high BMI, a BMI above 35, someone being obese is 30. So clearly obesity is a risk factor for severe disease, hospitalization, and death.
Why?
I have no idea. There are a number of things that this virus clearly affects people who are older. Mortality goes way up as you go above the age of 60. In 50 to 60, it's 2 to 3%. 60 to 70, it's 5 to 6. 70 to 80, it's 7 to 8. Greater than 80, it's about 10 to 15%. Clearly goes up when you have more medical problems, and clearly goes up with obesity. I can't explain to you why it goes up with obesity.
Let's take some phone calls from Hank in Uniondale. Hank, you're on the air.
Hello. Doctor, I'd like to see you go over those statistics again about the lethality. When I encounter people who don't want to wear a mask or have issues with the lethality of this disease, they cite some of these statistics. Recently, I watched a program on OAN, which is very, Trump supportive, and they're pulling out statistics from the CDC showing by age group that chances of you dying are less than 1%. And this is the attitude that a lot of these people are running around with. That has to be countered. There's not enough, statistics showing that this type of analysis is incorrect.
All right, Hank, thank you very much for your call. Dr. Goldman, you kind of went over those stats again, but I think it's worth repeating because even if, as Hank described and you described, the death rate is below 1%, that still means a lot of people dying, right?
Yep. So two issues. The first is the death rate. And again, best estimate of the death rate is 0.5% in all comers, so in all age groups. On the other hand, 50 to 60, it's 2 to 3%, 2 or 3 out of 100. 60 to 70, it is 5 to 6. So you're approaching 1 out of 20. 70 to 80, 7 to 8, 1 out of 10. And above 80, 10 to 15, so between 1 out of 10, 1 out of 70. If this goes through the population, 1 million people will, somewhere around 1 million people will die. The other aspect to this is about 15 to 20% end up in the hospital. So even though the chances of death are low, chances of hospitalization are roughly 1 out of 5 to 1 out of 7, 1 out of 8. If you're older, they go way up. And so the potential for this virus to make you very sick is very high. Sick enough, and by very sick, I mean sick enough to end up in the hospital, much greater than the flu. And people who get severe disease are going to feel, will have effects that last months. So people who end up in the intensive care unit, it's going to take them months to recover. We have young, healthy people who have COVID and are still tired a month later, and they're not in the hospital. They are just simply more short of breath. They are simply more tired. And there are people with prolonged symptoms where they're profoundly tired for months. So when you see, and again, I've seen this on Facebook also, 99.5% of the people survive this disease. That's true. It's not true of people above the age of 60. And the hospitalization rate is much higher. And many people don't get back to normal for months. In addition, there are some pretty devastating things. COVID in young people is associated with strokes, with blood clots, and subsequently pulmonary emboli. You clearly, during the time while you have COVID, the virus affects your clotting system, so you clot more easily, which puts you at higher risk of heart attacks, strokes, and pulmonary emboli. So, absolutely, most people will survive this disease. On the other hand, if we just let it run through the population, a lot of people are going to die.
We had more of a comment here from Karen, says, talking about the time frames for and realistic picture for the vaccine, because she feels, and I think that there are a lot of people who feel the same way, that some people are relaxing now, apparently thinking it's all over because there is a vaccine on the way. This brings up another question that we've gotten, and that is, will we still be required to wear masks, or should we still require masks after there is a vaccine available and we've gotten those shots?
Yeah. So I believe that we will probably be wearing a mask for months. By months, I mean probably till the summer. When the vaccine, and in fact, they're already pre-positioning the Pfizer vaccine in anticipation of it being approved next week. And on the surface, you will hear they're going to give 20 million doses. CDC just did an advisory which said that the 20 million doses should be given to healthcare workers and nursing home residents. So healthcare workers are likely to get the vaccine. Nursing home residents are likely to get the vaccine, likely before the first of the year. But the general public is not. After that, it will start to go out to high-risk people, and probably around March, April, May will start to be given to people without risk factors for severe disease. So we are likely to start seeing a large portion of the population vaccinated in March, April, May of next year. And so we're still with this for several months. Again, remember, they need to, in order to vaccinate everyone in this country, we need to vaccinate 300 million people for a two-dose vaccine. That's 600 million doses. And that's going to take a little while, and that's going to be a large logistical operation. As simple as, people aren't entirely sure that they have 600 million vials to put the vaccine in. So it's going to need to be manufactured, it's going to need to be packaged, it's going to need to be distributed, and that's going to take months.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.
Our guest is Dr. John Goldman. He's an infectious disease specialist at UPMC Pinnacle. We're answering your coronavirus questions. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@WITF on Twitter. We are at smarttalkWITF. We'll try to get to as many calls and as many questions as we can here in our last 15 minutes. Sharon asks, could you please ask your guests, if I visit a family member in her home and we are both masked and at least 6 feet apart, how long can I safely be in her house? 15 minutes?
So I actually would say that if you are both masked, it's very safe. So again, in the hospital, with lots of people coming in, we don't, with everyone masked, we do not see transmission. There was a study of hairdressers. So both hairdressers were infected with COVID. They cut the hair of something like 200 women. The hairdresser and her clients were both masked. There was not a single case of transmission. What I suggest is that if you're willing to wear masks, then it's a very safe visit. It isn't a bad idea to do it on a porch, to go through the house and turn on the exhaust fans in the bathroom, or if you have an exhaust fan in the house so you're circulating air better. But you can visit people while you're both wearing a mask, and that is much, much safer. I wouldn't spend a week there, but a visit of 1 to 2 hours is almost certainly safe.
You know, we've had a lot of people who have asked questions about getting the virus from a surface. In fact, we had a phone call from a gym owner who said that there has been no evidence that, you know, anyone has gotten the virus from going to a gym. What about that? What do we know? I mean, it's difficult to tell where someone acquires the virus, but what do we know about the potential danger for getting the virus from a surface?
So we know that the primary source of transmission is respiratory, person to person via the air. In other flu viruses, the flu viruses and other coronaviruses, it can be spread on surfaces. It's the virus has been documented to live on surfaces for long periods of time. It's harder to show that that is a good, that is a common source of transmission. It is, if it is not the predominant. What I advise people is two things. One, washing your hands frequently. So trying to wash your hands. If you've accidentally touched a surface with COVID on it, washing your hands will kill with soap and water or an alcohol solution will kill the COVID. The second is, believe it or not, if you're wearing your mask, it's also going to protect you. Now, that seems counterintuitive, but what happens is you touch the surface and then you touch your face. Most of us touch our face 20 times an hour. And wearing the mask prevents you from touching your face. So the washing your hands clearly will kill the virus. Wearing a mask will prevent you from infecting yourself, even if you have not washed your hands.
The point he brings up, though, about gyms and maybe some other public places, you know, again, I don't know that we have evidence that people have picked up the virus at some of these places other than restaurants, because people are sitting in closer proximity to one another for longer than 15-minute periods. What about some of these places?
So one of the big ironies of this pandemic is I actually think when everyone is masked, even public places are very safe. Now, restaurants are harder because you can't mask while you eat. And, you know, for example, the only time in the hospital we see transmission is actually in the break room when people are eating lunch. So I think that one of the ironies is if we wanted to get life closer back to normal, if we wanted to be able to open places like gyms, places like stores, we can do it much more easily and much more safely when everyone is masked. It is harder to show that it is due to that you get it from a surface, washing your hands and masking will protect you from getting it from a surface.
Let's take a call from Brett in Ephrata. Brett, you're on the air.
Thank you. My big question about the masking and the other things is, how can we believe it when we see pictures of politicians telling us to mask and hide in our basements? Then when the cameras, they think the cameras are off, they have the masks off and are gabbing it up. And other governors and the politicians going out to dinner and other public events with, you know, large groups, when they're telling us to not to do anything, to bunker down. I find the hypocrisy of it and it all this hard to believe and hard to trust. I don't trust our governor. I don't trust our so-called Secretary of Health in this state. I mean, they've all said one thing and done the other. When are they going to start doing as they tell us to do?
Brett, thank you very much for your call. Trust has been a big issue, not just with mask wearing, but even when it comes to the vaccine. Dr. Goldman, and he used the word hypocrisy. I don't know that our governor and Secretary of Health have been hypocritical about it, but I do know that there have been some leading politicians that have done exactly what Brett described, say telling everyone to wear a mask where people were locked down, and then they went out in public themselves without mask and broke their own rules. How do we get over this trust issue?
First of all, that is one of the major reasons that trust has been eroded. I guess my temptation is to quote Larry the Cable Guy, you can't fix stupid. So I don't quite know why people are surprised when some politicians tell us one thing and do another. That clearly happens. I do spend a fair amount of time thinking about how we keep people safe. You have to remember that one of my jobs is to make sure that patients, providers, and anyone who works at UPMC Pinnacle doesn't get sick. Obviously, that isn't just my job. There's literally 100 people thinking about that and trying to do it. And all I can tell you is when we review the literature says masking works. Social isolation works. Social distancing works. When it's really high stakes, when we're supposed to keep people well, and I've had the experience of one of our physicians, one of our residents, one of our doctors in training get sick, and you take that personally. So you feel responsible. And so my best recommendation is to wear the mask. They clearly work. And I will tell you, one of the first things I do before I get out of my car in the morning is I put a mask on. Now I'm walking through the parking lot and there's nobody around me. I am not getting infected with COVID walking through the parking lot at the hospital. On the other hand, I don't want people to see me without a mask because I know that will set a bad example. I personally feel if we had more politicians saying you need to wear a mask and then wearing that mask, if we had more politicians saying you need to social distance and following that example themselves, this would have been a much less severe pandemic. All I can tell you is I agree. That is hypocritical. All I can tell you is I agree. That's why people aren't convinced that masking and social distancing work. And let's face it, it is unpleasant. I do not like wearing a mask. It makes me feel uncomfortable. They're itchy. I always joke that if I'm ever waterboarded, I'm going to give up whatever secret in like 30 seconds because I can't stand that feeling. On the other hand, I believe it prevents disease. I personally, and everyone on our team, sets the right example. I wish more people would do that.
David has a question. Says, I am a 72-year-old with heart condition, COPD. We understand the vaccine is expected to be up to 95% effective. Once we receive both doses, should we later have antibody tests done to be sure that we are immune?
That's a good question. And let me phrase it this way, because I don't quite know the answer. I don't believe that we will need antibody testing. The antibody testing is not currently recommended. As we get more data, that may change. Once they get the vaccine, what I would suggest is watching to see what happens. If we get the vaccine and cases and hospitalizations start to go down, if they start to plummet, then you can relax social distancing. If they aren't going down, then you need to, especially for someone who is older and has several risk factors, need to continue with social distancing and masking.
By the way, the vaccine, now I know that we're talking about at least three different vaccines. Does the vaccine stop you from getting the virus, or does it just keep you from getting sick, like the flu shot?
That's a great question. And what the head of Moderna, the RNA vaccine maker, said was the data we have right now says that it keeps you from getting sick. It doesn't prove that it keeps you from being contagious. If I were a betting man, I would bet that it both prevents you from getting sick, prevents it from being contagious, and if you have a breakthrough infection like the flu with the flu shot, you are likely to get much less sick. We don't have that data yet.
So we still are going to be learning once we start vaccinating people. Is that correct?
We will still be learning once we begin vaccinating people. We're still learning right now. The way we treat this disease has changed greatly since the spring. We now routinely give people steroids. We frequently give them remdesivir. We try not to intubate them. And that's one of the reasons that the mortality for the disease has gone down. I expect that we will be continuing to learn about this disease for years to come.
Flora asks, please discuss mask use, care, disposal. What mask should we use? Can we reuse these standard paper-made medical masks? And how often can standard KN95 mask be worn more than one time? And proper cloth mask maintenance. We only have about a minute and a half, Dr. Goldman. Best mask to wear?
Best mask wear is a surgical mask, preferably a 2 or 3-ply paper mask. And you can wear those until they become wet, or unless they're hard to breathe through. I personally wear my hospital issue mask for about a week. I don't change it every day. I do it for roughly a week unless something happens to it. Cloth masks should probably be washed every 1 to 2 to 3 days. And again, shouldn't be worn if they're clearly wet, if they're hard to breathe through. I think for most of these masks, the cloth masks can be worn for 2 to 3 days. The paper masks can be easily worn for 3, 4, 5 days. I wear mine for a week. And again, they clearly work.
You've told me that your mother listens to the show. What kind of mask does your mother wear?
My mother has made a bunch of cloth masks. She is getting surgical masks from Amazon, and in fact usually wore the cloth masks. Now we'll be wearing the surgical masks since the cases are picking up. And I even called my mother to let her know I'd be on the show right before this started.
Dr. John Goldman, infectious disease specialist at UPMC Pinnacle. Always a pleasure talking to you. A lot of great information. Dr. Goldman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great weekend.